Welcome to the Next Gen Podcast. Stepping up to the microphone are your hosts, Bryson Wright and Alex Winton. They got next, so let's get to the show.
Hello and welcome into the Next Gen Podcast here on the Bluff City Media Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Bryson Wright. And I'm joined by my co-host, Alex Winton. And we got another really good show for you guys today. We're going to start with the schedule release, and then we're going to get into some more USA basketball stuff. So we're going to start. The Grizzlies schedule is officially out. We know all 82 games. Well, 80 out of 82, because we'll find out the last two based on the in-season tournament. But we know 80 out of the 82 games that the Grizzlies will be playing. And all in all, you know, I think there's a couple dates that people were really looking at to be the most important dates. The first one going to be, you know, when is Ja actually going to be coming back? I'm pretty sure that everybody, when they saw the schedule, the first thing they did was count out 25 games. So we do know that his first game he'll be eligible to come back would be December 19th at New Orleans. That game is on TNT, so we'll see what happens with that. It's going to be interesting to see if he's actually going to play in that game. I don't know exactly what the rules are going to be for his suspension, so I don't know if he's really going to be able to work out leading up to that, or if he's going to come back on that day, and then there's going to be one of those ramp-up processes where he's not going to play for a couple of games. But I think that was the first thing everybody was looking at. The season opener will also be against New Orleans, but it will be at home, so that'll be an interesting game to watch as well. And then the very next game, the defending champions are coming into Memphis, so it's going to be awesome. But the early season games, I feel like the first thing that I will say is that, you know, there's some tough games in that first 25. You know, like I said, they're going to be playing Denver. They're going to be playing Dallas. They're going to Los Angeles. They're going to be playing Boston. They're going to be playing Phoenix. Like, so these are a lot of really good teams they're going to be playing. But I still think overall there's going to be enough of those games against like a Portland or maybe a Utah, which they did struggle in Utah last year. So that is part of it. So not to say Utah is just a pushover, but, you know, playing Washington, San Antonio, it'll be interesting with Wimby. But I feel like they have enough of those kind of games in there that even without Ja, they can at least be around 500, if not a little bit above 500. That would be my number one thing that I'm looking at is how are they going to do those first 25 games. But for me, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like 13-12, 14-11, like something like that. I've seen some people saying they think they're going to go like win like 20 out of those games. I'm not ready to say that. But I also don't think it's going to be one of those things where they're going to be like 5-20 when Ja comes back. I think that they're going to have a solid start to the season. It might be a little bit up and down. And then whenever Ja comes back, they're probably going to really hit their stride, I'd say. Overall, I like the way the schedule turned out. They got a good number of national TV games, a little bit less than last year. Most of them will be coming after Ja returns, so that's something to watch too. But I don't think that's the issue. You know, I think this team does do a little bit better when they're a little bit under the radar anyway. So I feel like losing some of those national TV games, not really being touted as one of the best teams in the West so far, might actually be a good thing for them. All in all, I mean, I thought the schedule was pretty cool. We're going to get into some other like niche parts of the schedule coming up soon. But I wanted to start and ask you, Alex, like, what was your first takeaway when you saw the schedule?
Well, I say the first takeaway, obviously, is the first 25 games. And I was one of those people that said, well, I didn't say they were going to win 20, but I gave a range. And basically I said, I looked at it, thought about it, and I said they probably went anywhere from 15 of those games to at max 20. Like 20 is like the best case scenario, and it means like 15 is like the worst, right? Like where you said was a couple of games over 500, and then 20 is the best case scenario where they're just clicking on all cylinders coming out to the season. I probably think somewhere in the middle, so I'd probably say like 16. I'd say probably they win of those games, 16, 17 of those games. Kind of somewhere in the middle of that. I mean, the schedule is fine. Like you said, they had a lot of games or national TV games like after Ja comes back, which is, I mean, that's obvious. The NBA knows what they're doing. They understand Jaws sells tickets and he's a needle mover. Like, he's one of their stars, so they're going to do that. I'm not really worried about that. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not really anything that stands out too much. Obviously, we'll get into, like, the longer road trips and stuff. But, like, at least for just those first 25 games, I feel pretty good about them. Like you said, we got a lot of games, especially in the first, like, 10. Like, you got that back-to-back at Portland. I mean, and then you got the Utah game. So that probably be a – not a tough stretch, but it could be, like, trap games in a sense because Portland's a rebuilding team or will be. So you could not be up for those games, and that could be those games where you should win, but you end up losing them. And I will say, you know, you do got some home – the games that are tougher or would be tougher are home, like, Denver will be coming to Memphis and Miami, you know, and Boston. So, like, those type of games where they'll be tougher or would be tougher on the road, you get at home, so you got a better chance of winning those games. So, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, the rest of the schedule I feel pretty good about. I mean, you know, nothing really too crazy. I mean, you know, obviously we're getting into the details, but, yeah, I'm cool with it. Like, you know, I think the Grizzlies are going to be the same as they have been the last couple of years. People have doubted them when they had Jaren out last year for the first 16 to 20 games, and they still had one of the better records in the league. Like, in the year prior, I mean, Ja went down. They were, like, 9-10, and then they went on a run. So they're going to do the same thing that they've been doing. Like, it's just – until they show me otherwise, I expect the same. Like, that's the standard to me at this point.
Yeah, and, I mean, it is going to be a little bit weird because, you know, Tyus Jones isn't going to be there to be the main point guard with Ja out. And it's going to be Marcus Smart. So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of plays out at the beginning of the game. I don't know if I would say 15 games is the worst case scenario. I think that, you know, I think there is a chance they lose a few more than that just at the beginning. But like I said, I still feel like they'll be around the 500 mark, if not a little bit above it. And I think that'll be good enough at that point of the season to, you know, at least stay close. And I mean, like you just said, they started 9-10 and then won 56 games. Obviously, that's a different roster than they have now. And there's going to be a lot of people that need to step up. Like, Zaire Williams is going to have to step up a lot. Santi Aldama is going to have to take a step. Like, there's a lot of guys that haven't really proven it yet that are going to have to be in bigger roles. So, like, I understand why some people are a little bit lower, especially on the beginning of the season. But I do think, like you said, those bigger games being at home, I know they are going to have to go to Phoenix and go to Dallas. But I think that most of those games, like you said, the Nuggets game, the Heat game, being at home is going to be good, especially for the role players and the younger players. Because, I mean, it's just a fact that the role players and the young players, they all play better at home than on the road. I mean, David Roddy had, what, like a 17-point fourth quarter at home. So it's like stuff like that is stuff that you'll see much more in FedEx Forum than somewhere else. So I think that's a good thing. You know, without Ja at the beginning of the season, I think it's good that they're going to have a few more of those tougher games at home. I'm really hoping – the biggest thing that I'll say, obviously, you know, they're going to play 41 home and 41 road games like they do every year. But the road record has to get better. Like, that, I think that's going to be my number one thing going into this season, is that they're going to have to be better on the road. Because last year, obviously, it was great that I think they went, 36-5 at home, and that's awesome. But at some point, you got to win road games too. Like, it's just a fact. And I do think that coming into this season, they should be more locked in on that. I think having some more veteran guys, you know, like bringing in Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose, even though we'll see what Derrick Rose's role is really going to be, but I still think that those are the kind of guys that can help them when they go on those road trips and stuff like that. Which does kind of lead into the next part of the schedule release that I did want to talk about, which was, what is the toughest stretch of the season, right? So, all in all, for me, I think it's going to be in January. Outside of the first 25 games, the first 25 games are going to be tough because Ja's going to be out. But I think that January 5th through the 18th, that's about 2 weeks after Ja's probably going to be coming back. They're going to play at Los Angeles Lakers, at Dallas, at Phoenix. Then they're going to have home games against the Clippers, Knicks, and Warriors, and they're going to Minnesota. And those are all playoff teams in that stretch, all playoff teams from last year, besides Dallas. But I think Dallas is going to be a playoff team this year. So, those are all good teams. They struggled on the road, like I said. Six out of those seven games are against Western Conference opponents. So that stretch of the season is probably going to have a pretty big – it's going to have a pretty big kind of impact on where they end up in the standings. You know, if they win, like, five out of those six games, then, you know, it'll probably help them with a lot of tiebreakers. They're going to move up in the standings during that time because I expect the West to be really close. So I think just a good stretch of games can really put you over the top. But, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the toughest stretch of games. But if they can win four or five out of those seven, I think that'll be good. They just got to avoid, you know, losing all those road games and then dropping one to the Warriors at home or dropping one to the Knicks at home. Like, that's really just what they got to avoid, I think. I think as long as they win those home games and then at least win one or two of those on the road, they'll probably be fine during that stretch. But, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the toughest time of the season outside of those first 25 games without Ja.
Yeah, I would say that is probably the toughest. I'll say the second toughest, or the one that I kind of noticed in terms of the tougher stretch, is probably the four-game homestand. It's like in March. I think it's from the 18th to the 25th, where they basically play at Sacramento, at Golden State, at San Antonio, at Denver, and then I think right after it's Los Angeles. And now, obviously, the San Antonio game, it might not be that tough of a game, but again, like you said, we got to be better on the road. So for me, I said it all last year. Until they figure out their road woes, like then it's going to be, you know, it's going to be hard to really be serious, you know, at all. So they really got to fix that. So again, you know, that game, again, with all these road games could be a coin flip, you know what I mean? Because we saw last year that they weren't that great on the road, you know what I mean? So I think that could be a tough stretch, especially because I think Sacramento, Golden State, obviously Denver and L.A., I think we'll all be in the playoff race at least, especially to me, Denver and L.A. I'm very high on those teams in terms of where they'll be. So they'll probably be competitive. So I think that's another tough stretch. But I think the stretch you talked about is pretty accurate as well. Because, again, four of those games are on the road. So, again, that's just going to be tough. I mean, again, another one is a back-to-back. So, you know, it's going to be very tough, like you said, especially because Josh should be back by then. And he's still probably trying to get a rhythm. They're going to try to figure out, you know, how he's getting incorporated back into the lineup and all that, where they're going to play smart at once he's back. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be a lot of things they're going to be figuring out in that stretch. So, you know, if they could win, like you said, like five of those games, like, it'd be great. You know what I mean? So I hope they do. You know, and again, you know, they'll get through these stretches. I mean, the season's long. It's an 82-game schedule. So, you know, it's going to have its ebbs and flows, like it's always going to. You know, but they just got to stay even keel through the course of the games. But, yeah, I think those are probably the – if I think about it, those are probably the two toughest stretches to me, especially because the March win, like, you'll be – you'll kind of know what you are as a team, and you'll kind of be tuning up for the playoffs at that time. So, and against those teams, they'll probably be playoff teams. I think that's why I put that second. But the stretch you talk about is pretty good as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, yeah, like I said, it's going to be Western Conference teams, so that's going to make it even more difficult because the East, you know, they have some good teams as always, more at the top. But I feel like the West is just better top to bottom. So anytime you have one of those Western Conference road trips, you know, none of those are easy. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing for them. And then they already have been bad on the road, like we've talked about. So that's something they're really going to have to fix. But the next thing I did want to talk about, because another big thing that I looked at was going to be the reunion games. So we got the reunion games, whereas, you know, whether that's players that used to be Grizzlies coming back to Memphis, the first one of those is going to be really interesting with Dylan Brooks coming back on December 15th. I don't know exactly what the reception is going to be in the arena. I'm sure there's going to be some cheer, some boos, because, you know, he's kind of a polarizing player even among the Grizzlies fan base. But I know for a fact that he's going to be picking up Desmond Bane 94 feet. Like, as soon as he touches the ball, like, he's going to be picking him up the whole game. Because that's the kind of intensity he's coming back. I'm expecting a lot of antics just because he's going to play into that a lot. I mean, we know that that's what he's going to do. But also, I think it's going to be a really good game because that Rockets team with him, they're not going to be bad. You know, they're now. I don't think they're a better team than the Grizzlies per se, but they're good enough to win those games and win that game. And I think that Dylan coming in, he's going to be really locked in. So that's going to be really exciting to see that. I'm excited for him to come back and see kind of what happens in that game. Like, I think before Ja's return, that's probably the game I'm the most looking forward to, just because, not even because of the game itself, but just because of, like, the media stuff around it, coming into it, the antics that might take place on the court. I think it's just going to be a fun game, regardless of the outcome. So that's the first one. And then the other one is Tyus Jones is not going to be coming back until March 12th with the Wizards. That's if he's still on the Wizards then. I mean, obviously, we don't know what they're going to be doing because they're kind of in a rebuilding phase. So they might be moving people around and stuff. But as of now, it looks like he's going to be coming back on March 12th. And I think that's going to be an exciting game. Probably not as much as Dylan is, because, you know, Tyus is more soft-spoken kind of guy. So I don't think it's going to be as much of that. I think he's going to get a really good, like, standing ovation and all that. They're probably going to make a little video for him. As long as they play that shot he made in game 6 against Minnesota before the game, I think everybody will be happy. And then the last reunion game, it goes the other way. We got Marcus Smart going back to Boston on, I'm pretty sure, on Super Bowl Sunday, February 4th. I think that's Super Bowl Sunday. But it will be the second year in a row where they kind of had that set up, where they're going to go to Boston basically at the beginning of February. And I think for Marcus Smart, I think that's going to be a big game, an emotional game for him, obviously, because not to say that he doesn't want to be in Memphis now, but he was very hurt. You know, I feel like when the Celtics traded him, they had told him they weren't going to trade him and all that, and he was supposed to be a pillar of the team. He was there for 9 seasons, so it's going to be a really emotional game. But I also think it's going to be I think Marcus is the kind of player that he's going to come in there and he's going to play really well in that game. And I think the team in general, especially at that time, is going to have, you know, rallied around him a lot. And I think they're all going to really want that game. But yeah, those are the reunion games that I'm really looking forward to this year. And yeah, I'm sure there's a couple others that we could talk about of players that have been off the Grizzlies for a little bit longer. You know, like, you know, Mike Conley's going to come back as a Timberwolf for the first time. That's going to be interesting. So there's a lot of other stuff, but those were the three that I think really kind of stood out to me.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. Those games would probably be good. I mean, I mean, again, I think the tribute videos would be great. You know, even for Smart, I mean, obviously Smart probably get the best one just because, again, he's been there for 9 years. But I really do expect Smart and Dylan to kind of get into it for whatever reason, just because of just how they are. Like, I'm expecting it. Not with Tyus, like you said. I don't expect nothing at that game. I mean, I do. You know, I hope we win. But obviously, I think Tyus will try to play well. You know what I mean? But I don't think there's going to be any, like, antics in that game. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be hoop. But when Dylan goes up against us with Smart, especially starting, yeah, those first couple games, yeah, I expect some smoke. Like, for whatever reason. Just because it's like, you know, a lot of people have viewed Dylan or Smart as the guy that has replaced Dylan in terms of what he was on his team. So I'm pretty sure, you know, Smart has heard that. I'm pretty sure Dylan has heard that, even though he might not say he hasn't. He probably has heard it or seen some of that. So, or they'll either hasn't seen it, but they'll talk about it as those games come up or get closer. So, you know, I do expect that to be kind of a thing. But yeah, you know, they should win those first two. That one in Boston might be tough. But again, like, you know, I think because, like you said, with them rallying around him probably and him wanting to play well, because again, he didn't want to leave Boston, but I'm understanding, like, that's against his former team. Like, he wants to show out. I think they could definitely win that game. You know, I think it'd be a close one, but I think they could end up pulling out that game. But I do think that all three will be fun games though. You know, it's always good to see the reunion games. Like, I mean, like last year, but this past season, you know, with Kyle, you know, when Kyle came back and Melton came back, you know, those guys were showing love at the end of the game after. So, you know, it's always love with those players that played beforehand, you know, because they had a part in this. Like, and it could have been somebody that barely played, you know what I mean? You know, but they're all so close, you know what I mean? That's kind of what they built here. So, you know, I expect the same when they see Dylan and when they see Ty. So, you know, it'll be fun overall.
Yeah, definitely. And that Celtics game, I think, is the one I'm most looking forward to, just because, I mean, remember the whole finding the West comment. Ja did say the Celtics were the team to beat because they haven't really beat the Celtics. You know, they haven't really beat the Celtics either on the road or at home with this new group. And I think adding Marcus Smart is just going to add more fuel to that. And the Celtics are going to be really good this year. And also, I mean, you talk about Dylan being the replacement, you know, or Dylan feeling like he was replaced. It's a little bit different for the Celtics because, you know, Brogdon was kind of already on the team and they already had Derek White. But, you know, they traded him and ended up with Kristaps. So it's kind of like, oh, you know, they just shipped him off. And not to say Kristaps replaced Marcus because they're different players, but it's like kind of trying to show. I think he's going to really want to try to outplay him in that game and also outplay, you know, Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon, like those guys, just because to kind of like the whole Jimmy Butler thing where he went back and he's like Tobias Harris over me, like after the game. Like, I feel like we might get one of those kind of quotes from Marcus Smart. But yeah, like, I think that that game is probably going to be one of the more exciting games of the season, just in general. But yeah, just to continue on, like, some more stuff about the schedule, too. I talked about the national TV games a little bit. I think that that Pelicans game, when Ja first comes back, if he does play in that game, might be the highest rated game of the season for the Grizzlies, just overall, because I feel like the fanfare around that is also going to be just really insane. So I think I'm really looking forward to that one, not just because Ja's coming back, but also just because I think that that's some, like, there are some nights where it feels like every, like, the entire NBA world is going to be watching the same game. Like, I'll go back a couple years ago. I think it was when the Warriors were playing the Thunder, and it was a regular season game, and it was the one where Steph hit that really big three to win the game. It felt like every NBA fan was watching that game, even though it was a regular season game. It wasn't a playoff game or the finals. And I feel like Ja's return game is going to have one of those effects where whether you like Ja, whether you don't like Ja, whatever it is, people are going to tune in for that game because it's going to be his first game back. And I think that, I think just everything around that is going to be really fun. So I'm really excited. I mean, I'm excited for the season in general. You know, they're going to be starting their preseason at the beginning of October, October 8th. So they'll have a couple preseason games and stuff like that too to kind of get back into the flow of things. But I think the number one thing I'll say is, even though, you know, we'll see if they can get to like 50 wins or something again, but just overall, my expectations after seeing the schedule is they just need to be a top six seed, man. Like, if they are a top six seed, they're going to be okay. Because I know I said it last year too. You know, you want home court advantage, but the last two times they've had home court advantage, they've lost home court, or the last three times they've had home court advantage, they lost home court advantage in the first game. So it's one of those things where it's like, not to say that you don't want home court advantage because you still, you like, you got to win those games, but I'm not as worried about that, especially when you saw last year that, you know, a seven seed and a six seed won in the first round and stuff like that. No, the Lakers being a seven seed made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals. So I'm not as worried about their seeding, more as just as long as they're avoiding the play-in and the team is healthy. That's the other thing. And the team is healthy going into the postseason. They're going to be okay. They have some question marks still, but they have question marks coming into every season. And they figured it out so far. So I expect them to figure it out again.
That's fair. I'll say this. The second game that you were talking about, the which I think in terms of national televised games that would be most interesting is the Golden State game on MLK Day. I think that's probably going to be like the other one that's going to be cold because, like, again, I think everybody's going to be watching that because a lot of teams will be, you know, I think they'll only have like three or four games on the day. Obviously, you already know the significance with Memphis and MLK. Obviously, with the Golden State Warriors and Memphis, the Grizzlies, like, the how they got, you know, smoke for each other. So I think that'll be another game. But in terms of just overall with the schedule, I'm of a different opinion. In terms of depending on what your expectation is, if you expect this team to me, because I'm a big historian, so I, instead of saying top six, I go top four at least. Not even because, again, even though they haven't taken advantage of home court, just historically, even though you've seen teams that have been a 6-7 seed made it that far, usually the team that wins it is the team that has been a top four seed. I think that's gone back to since like I think what nine, like the 90s. Like it's been kind of a consistent thing. So if they want to win, I think they gotta. I think the expectation for me is to be top four, but I don't think that's too far fetched because they've been top two the last 2 years with a bunch more injuries. And I think problems coming into the season. Because last year, you didn't have Jaren for the first 20 games. Then as soon as Jaren came back, Bane was out. Then, obviously, you had the Josh suspension, and you still won 51 games. Then, the year prior, you started 9-10, and Ja was out for a good amount of those games. Was when they were when they started out 9-10, and then I think that last stretch of the season post All-Star break, he missed a lot of those games, and they still won 56 games. So I don't think it's too far-fetched. Obviously, you don't want to, I think they'll be top six for sure. I think that's like worst case scenario to me personally. And like you said, health-wise, I think, for me, if Bane and Jaren are healthy to start the season and the majority of everybody else is, I think they'll still, by the end of the season, as long as Ja comes back and is healthy and is good, I think they'll be a top four seed. Now, where in that top four, I don't know. You know what I mean? But I think they'll avoid the play-in. So you got some people talking about the Grizzlies being in the play-in. Again, I remember seeing some standings and some rankings, and I just think that's kind of crazy. But again, I kind of expect it because everybody's kind of just written them off, which, again, they thrive in that position anyway. So, I think they're just going to exceed expectations again. Like, it's just hard for me to – until they don't do it, then I'll – be of, I have a different mindset, but for now, my expectations gonna be the same. So, I expect them to continue to just be to keep that same Memphis standard that they've had the last 3 years.
Yeah, because I mean, when you go back to that 2 years ago, whenever they were 9-10, and I think I'm pretty sure Ja got hurt in the game where they went 9-10,
and yeah, it was the
like game. That night. Yeah, that game is one of those games where even me, I feel like I'm usually pretty optimistic. I was like, oh, yeah, season's over. You know what I mean? That's really what it felt like that day. It's like, oh, yeah, the season's over. And then, after that, after seeing the way that they rallied at that time, obviously this roster is different, but it's really hard for me to doubt that the team in general after that, because it's like that was when it felt like the sky was, falling, literally, Chicken Little type. Sky is falling, all of that, bro. And then they came out. They went on a little win streak even without Ja. Ja comes back, they go on another win streak. And then next thing you know, they are number two in the West. You know what I mean? So I think after that, it just gives me a lot of confidence that they're going to continue to be able to navigate injuries, navigate suspensions, all that, just because they've done it. If they prove that they've done it, like you said, until they prove that they're not going to do that, I feel pretty good about it. But we do got to get back to our next topic for today, which is back to the FIBA World Cup and everything for Team USA. As they wrapped up their exhibition games this past weekend with a comeback win against Germany, which was a really good game, they're going to be starting their real FIBA World Cup games this weekend on Friday at, I think 7:40 a.m. Central. So it's going to be pretty early in the morning if you want to get up and watch that. But looking at Alex's face, I don't think he's going to be there. He might have to watch the highlights. But I'm going to try to get up. I'm going to try to get up for it. I'm going to try to get up for it early in the morning, playing in the Philippines, all that. It's going to be cool. I'm excited for the real games to get started. But getting back to that Germany game, it was really just, I think it was probably one of the best games that I've seen, in terms of FIBA games in a minute, just because, especially in that first half, it was like Team USA forgot how to play offense for a little bit. It was almost like every player was like playing my career. And when they couldn't score, they would just, okay, now I'll pass. Instead of swinging the ball, there was not a lot of ball movement. It felt like the ball was kind of sticking to people and everybody was trying to go one-on-one, which was really confusing to me because I feel like they haven't really done that in these other games. I really feel like in these other games, they've been good at sharing the ball and stuff. But for some reason in that first half, everybody was going one-on-one. And then you had a team on the other side with Germany, who of course has Dennis Schroeder, Franz Wagner, Mo Wagner, Daniel Theiss, all these guys who were pretty solid. Franz was playing awesome in that game too. But they were all playing, ball movement, good screens, just good fundamental basketball, and they were cooking. They were really cooking for a lot of that game, really up until the third quarter, and then it almost felt like a switch flipped for Team USA. And I think it really started on defense, and I do want to get to Jaren's defense, because it really felt like whenever Jaren was in the game, you could just tell how much better the defense is. And I mean, if you look at the plus minus, you know, Jaren had the second highest plus minus besides Anthony Edwards, who had an incredible game, you know, finished with 34 points. Jaren, you know, kind of led the defense. He had 6 blocks on the other end, and a lot of them were pretty impressive too. But even when he wasn't getting blocks, it really just felt like, you know, even though Team USA doesn't have great perimeter defense, whenever those guys kind of got into the paint, it just was like Jaren was always there as a deterrent. Even though, even if they, you know, he didn't get a block, or even if they didn't shoot the ball, it was just kind of like he was there, they got to pass it back out. And I saw a lot of that down the stretch, and it forced Germany into some tough situations. You know, they ended up, you know, getting out and running off of some of those blocks, forcing some turnovers, stuff like that. Tyrese Halliburton hit 3 really big threes. And then down the stretch, it was just the Anthony Edwards show. And I think my favorite play was when they were down by 3. You know, Jaren comes down, he gets the block on Dennis Schroeder. They pass it up to Ant, and he hits the 3 to tie the game. And Ant shows all that emotion. And it really felt like at that moment, like that was the moment where I was like, yeah, they're going to win this game. You know what I mean? Like when he hit that shot, they tied it up. And then I think they went on an 18-0 run to regain the lead. So yeah, that was just an awesome game. And I feel like if Team USA ends up winning the gold medal, they're going to come back and look at this game, and they're going to be like, that game is the reason why we won the gold medal. Like that was the game where we really came together and figured out how to play. And yeah, it was awesome. It was just awesome to watch. And, you know, shout out Team USA. I think they're going to do really good. Proving a lot of the doubters wrong already, because when they released the roster, I saw a lot of people, and I know we talked about it when we first got the roster too, that I was like, a lot of people are acting like this is not a good team. Like people were acting like the team was bad because there was no LeBron or KD or Curry or like those names on the team. But they got a lot of really good players on this team. And I think they just continue to prove that. And I think they're going to continue to prove that their first game coming up with New Zealand. And I think just in these little group play games and just throughout the tournament, I think they're going to prove that they are better than what a lot of people were saying they were coming into this.
Yeah, that game, the Germany game was really crazy. Because again, I thought at certain points it was cooked. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. I think it was probably third quarter. Because like you said, in the first half, like the real main things that stood out to me is second chance points. They weren't rebounding the ball. And then on offense, they weren't moving the ball. And again, even though they had moved the ball, like half-court offense hasn't been their strong suit, they better in transition. Usually when they're in transition, they're like elite. And again, it all really starts with defense, like you said. For them, if they defend, they're not going to lose to anybody. They focus on the little things, defense, rebounding, stuff like that. They're not going to lose to anybody because that's what we saw in the second half. Obviously, they needed a spark, which I think was obviously provided by Halliburton and Reeves. I think both of them had 16 apiece overall in the game. But, like, in that third quarter, I think Halliburton had, like, 8 straight. Like, it was a crazy run. Basically, he brought – I won't say brought him back, but basically flipped the game, in my opinion, in that third quarter. And then, obviously, you know, Ant had 34 points as well, went crazy. But Jaren, obviously, was the defensive guy, like, anchoring the defense. He had 6 blocks. And, again – I think somebody told me, I said, whatever the block record is, I think he has a chance to break it in FIBA. I think it's 10. So I do have think a chance that he could break that record. Like, that's how much I believe in what he's going to do. Because, again, like, his game, like, again, like we said, we've seen it before, obviously, watching the Grizzlies. Like, dude changes the whole game. Like, he's one of the best defenders in the league. I mean, you know, some arguably the best defender in the league, because I remember somebody saying, I think it was a Lakers fan, he's like, I watched, and this was before the game, right? I think it was like, he's like, I watched the last 3 games of FIBA. I don't know how people are saying Jaren's the best defender in the league. And it's funny, right after that game, you have this game where Jaren goes crazy defensively. And so it's just funny to see because, like, again, like, Jaren, for me at least, is just, like, one of one. Like, you don't see a lot of people defensively do what he does. And it showed because, again, like, I think Germany didn't score, like, the last, like, you said, 18-0 run. Like, I don't think they scored a lot of points in that fourth quarter because, again, Jaren was everywhere. He was obviously switching everything. He was guarding, like you said, Dennis. I think he even a couple blocks on Franz. Like, he was doing everything. And again, he even had 8 rebounds. That led the team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Jaren, you know, again, where rebound hasn't been his strong suit, he led the team in rebounding. So you know, he did the little things. Again, he only had 7 points, didn't really shoot a great percentage. But again, the 7 shots were good looks. And again, that's not his role in this team. Obviously, he'll get, you know, times to score when there's a mismatch and an opportunity to. But a lot of it's going to be anchoring the defense and doing the little stuff. You know, that's what I think I said a couple pods ago. Like, you might see a stat line where he only has like 7 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. But to me, he was the second best player on that game. You know what I mean? Even though Reeves and Halliburton had a good game, and even Ant, like, I think he was easily a top 3 player on that team, like most impactful player because of what he does on the other end. So, yeah, I think that was a great game for them, a great test. That game and the Spain game really showed them that, hey, we can do this. We just have to be consistent with the little things. When they're consistent with the little things, they won't lose anybody. Like, I really feel that way because that's what it's about. When you have a team like this, it's just about locking in on those things because it's hard to do because you feel like you're more talented than everybody. And so you kind of get lax naturally. And I think that's what happened in the first half. And I think part of that third quarter, too, that's why I thought it was cooked because I think they were down like 10 or 12. And I didn't see anything different in terms of the second chance opportunities or closeouts. But then again, a flip just switched and they were right back in it. So, you know, I'm excited to see them play because I do like this team. I like a lot of their players. And, you know, I think Kerr's starting to figure out what lineups work too as well. So I think we'll see, you know, some different line, or not some different lineups, maybe, you know, different patterns and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I think Team USA, that was a great win. That's probably one of the better feedback, probably the best game out of the 5 they played in terms of just going through something besides the Spain game. But yeah, it was a great game. So I'm excited to see what Team USA does. I think starting this weekend. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then I do want to mention like a couple more things. I know that you tweeted about it, and I think I responded to it. When Jaren made the skip pass out of the double team, I forgot who it was he passed it to that was open in the corner.
Brandon Ingram.
Brandon Ingram. And I was like, yes, that's what we need to see. See him passing out of the double team, stuff like that. And then the other thing that I did want to mention is I don't know if they got this from the Grizzlies, but Team USA loves to run the first play of the game and the first play out of halftime for Jaren. Now, the rest of the time, they might not even look his way. But the first play of the game and the first play of the third quarter, and I think in this last game it was the first 2 plays out of the third quarter, are probably going to go to Jaren. And I feel like that's just something to kind of get him a little bit going. And I think that's something that, you know, Steve Kerr probably noticed from coaching against Jaren, is I feel like when he starts the game with a make, like the rest of the game is just easy. Like, I feel like there are times, like when he has his bad games, it's because he's getting frustrated. And I feel like when he comes out, you know, gets a post up and scores early on, I kind of just feel like it's something that it kind of like calms his nerves a little bit. And he kind of is like ready to lock in after that. And I think that's really something that they should keep doing, you know, keep looking at him early in the game, especially on some of these teams where he's going to have big mismatches coming up. Because, you know, no offense to some of these teams or teams like Jordan and stuff like that. Like they've got professional basketball players, right? They got good players, but they just don't have the level of guys that they'll probably need to match up with a guy like Jaren. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think we're going to see a lot more of him on offense because he's going to get some mismatches coming up. But yeah, and I also think that I think the number one thing I've been looking at is this is kind of a preview of what Jaren would look like at the 5. I think he's shown that he's not ready to be a full-time 5 yet, but I think there's going to be a lot of lineups where they're going to be more comfortable with him playing the 5 after what he's shown in FIBA. But also, I will say, I also like the FIBA rules a lot. I'll just throw it out there. The FIBA rules, like watching these games, it's been, you know, they're not as high scoring, but it's also one of those things where, you know, they're still scoring like 90, 100 points, which I really think that's like the perfect level of, you know, between defense and offense is when they're scoring in the 90s, low 100s. You know, I know everybody will talk about, you know, they don't want to see 140 to 140 and just chucking threes and stuff like that. But I feel like in the FIBA game, I feel like they found a way to balance it a lot. And I like a lot of the rules that they've been playing with. I think they let players be a little bit more physical. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jaren has like shined a little bit, because he can use his physicality on defense a little bit more and not worried about getting called for, you know, ticky-tack fouls when he goes up for blocks. So I did just want to throw out there that I really have enjoyed watching these games with FIBA rules. And I'd like the NBA to, you know, continue to incorporate some of that. I know they did that already with trying to cut down on flopping and cut down on, you know, when players, you know, do the pump fake and jump into people and stuff like that. I think FIBA has done a really good job of cracking down on that. And I think the NBA should follow suit.
Yeah, I to your point about that, I think, you know, they're trying to. I think obviously it's a little bit different just because, again, different players. And obviously, you know, not everybody's an NBA player, but they're obviously professional players on these other teams. So it is harder, but I do think they're trying to find that, you know, good medium of not having too much offense, but at the same time not having games where it looks like 60 to 61. Like, you know what I mean? Like 80 to 81 back in the day, like in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. So I think, you know, that's the thing that they're going to – it's going to be hard to figure out, especially now when, you know, guys are the talent level is all-time high. You know, you just kind of – it's hard to find that balance. You know, it's a trial and error thing. So I think they'll keep trying to figure it out. But I will say, you know, I have enjoyed watching this team play. You know, I think, with Jaren, like you said, there's going to be times where he's going to be able to have games where they'll have mismatches. And, again, in terms of him playing the five, I mean, this is good for him because, again, even if he doesn't start at the five, I've always been saying this, and I've said this since his second year. If they're going to win a championship or they're going to play in the playoffs, a lot of the games are going to be him finishing at the five. It's just how it is. That's always how it's been. Like, you go to all these other teams, even when AD had a big that year when they went to 2020 or they won a chip in 2020, a lot of those games he finished at the five. Even the game, I think, with Giannis at certain times when they won a championship, he ended at the five. Shoot, even Draymond, last year, a couple games, ended at the – like, it's just – your best player is going to play at that point. You know what I mean? And Jaren is going to have to be at the five to be one of your best players in terms of if you want to win. I mean, obviously, for regular season, I get it. But in postseason, they're going to probably finish him at the five. And, I mean, Jenkins has done that. We've seen him make that adjustment where he'll start Jaren at the five. So, you know, I think he's going to do that. And, again, it's good for him because, again, like, if you really want to win, like, that's what he's going to have to do. And again, you got to build around that too. You know, it's obviously you got to build around his skill set at the five, you know, in terms of the lineups and stuff. But yeah, I think it's a good experience for him because again, he'll get used to it. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, it's basketball, but I think it's just about focusing on certain little different things at the position. Like I think, you know, a rebounding and screen setting, which I think this is why this is a great experience for him because he has to do more of the little things versus just score. Like, again, like I said on Twitter, him making a skip pass out of that double team, again, tears of joy, man. That, like, little stuff, man. Like, again, he wasn't doing all that. You know what I mean? Like, that's great. Like, I know it's little for people, but that's probably the best highlight. I've seen those blocks. I don't care about – you know what I mean? We've seen that all year, those crazy blocks. That skip pass, I didn't see a lot of. You know what I mean? I mean, we saw it a couple times. But, like, that quick, that right on the money pass, Ingram hit the shot too. Like, we need to see more of that. And the screen setting, not getting those little ticky-tack fouls on the screen. Rebounding, like, that's the stuff I care about with Jaren when I watch these games. The block and the points, like, I'm used to that. Like, I expect him to do that. That other stuff, you know, like, that's the stuff that I think is going to really take his game to the next level in terms of as a complete player. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm excited for him and I'm excited for the team to do good. You know, I don't really have any doubts. You know, I think they'll get the job done. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then the last thing I'll say before we kind of close here is talking about that pass and him kind of developing that area of his game. I think that's going to be really important just early in the year because they're going to have to play through him a lot and he's going to see a lot of double teams. So I think that's something he's going to have to continue to work on is, you know, fighting through double teams and passing out of those and passing out to, you know, it was Brandon Ingram in this game, but when it's back on the Grizzlies, it'll be, you know, Desmond Bain, Luke Kennard, Jake LaRavia, Zaire Williams, like some guys are some solid shooters. So I think that just seeing that and then imagining what it could look like with Luke Kennard or with Desmond Bane is something that's going to be really good too. Obviously, he still has a long way to go. It was one time he did it, but it's more than we've ever seen him really do it before. He hasn't really been known for his passing, so that's something that I think he's going to have to continue to get better on, especially if he really wants to be the first option, you know, early on in the season without Ja. But as always, I just want to say I appreciate everybody who listened to this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. For my co-host, Alex Winton, I'm Bryson Wright. Make sure to subscribe and become a Bluff City Media Insider. But we will see y'all on the next episode where we'll have everything, even more Grizzlies news to cover. See y'all later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a like and a comment wherever you download your podcasts. Head over to www.bluffcitymedia.co, where you will find comprehensive coverage of all things Memphis sports and how you can become an insider. We'll see you back here next time.